Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave Solomon. Merciful. Thanks a lot. It's some kind of day already. And look, as is often the case doing this show, which is always a trip, by the way, and we're coming up on 2 years. That's unbelievable. August 2011 is when we started this affair, if you will. And at that time, I thought, you know, wouldn't it be cool to do what is said that we're going to do, which is contemporary and straight ahead and the stuff that falls in between the cracks, fused, funky, whatever, all of jazz under one roof. But wouldn't it be also amazing to feature the folks who made it happen, those that were in the trenches in the early stages of what we now know is this glorious genre? And one of the people that kept cropping up in my head was Ron Carter. And today, if God is merciful, he will be with us, and he'll be talking about some kind of career that has lasted over 45 years. So I'm going to do a little fast foot action here and put my papers down so I can do this. We're going to go to something that was back in the day. Let's just do this. Let's just do something that may jog your memory or not. I hear the cell phone ringing. I'll get to that in a minute. This is going back now to 1965, one of the glorious quintets that ever was. Miles Davis and company, including Ron Carter, and Ron Carter's song RJ from ESP on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Miles Davis Quintet from EST in 1965. That's RJ. Got a little story for you. I just got off the phone with Ron Carter. Are you ready for this? This is the first time this has ever happened, and I blame AT&T. AT&T told Ron Carter that the number to call in, 323-843-6172, was not in working order. That's the first time that's happened in close to 2 years. Now, this is not the first time I've had trouble with AT&T. There was an artist that we had about a year ago. She used two phones, both AT&T, and she could not get through. So it's not a problem with Blog Talk Radio. It's a problem with AT&T. So I bless Ron Carter for calling in. He sounded very frustrated, and of course he would, trying to get through. So you know what? Just for giggles and such, Griselda, why don't you give me a call at 323-843-6172, and let's see if you get through, because I've had Sprint. I've had Verizon, I've had a number of other carriers, and it's been absolutely no problem. It's AT&T. I am not kidding you. That is just crazy. So, of course, Ron apologized and said, anybody who's in the listening area, come on out to the Hamilton on Thursday. And that's why we were going to have Ron Carter on, because he's going to be part of the D.C. Jazz Festival at the Hamilton, which is in full swing. Tomorrow night, Cyrus Chestnut is going to be there. I have to check to see who's going to be there tonight. That is just crazy. Oh, so Griselda, if you're listening, if you haven't gone to get lunch yet. Oh, there she is. Okay, let's see. Hey, Griselda, is this you?
Yes, hon. Hi.
Hi, hon.
Can you
listen,
hear me?
What
there you are.
Yes, I can. What kind of carrier do you have on your phone?
Right now, I've got it plugged into my computer because it's the Magic Jack.
Okay. So you're not having
so
any problem.
It's the internet.
Okay.
Not right now. And if someone else came on, I might get knocked off because mine doesn't have like the for conference calling, so to speak.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
For good.
Well, and
look. Is Mr. Carter having a hard time through?
Say that again?
Is Mr. Carter having a hard time getting through?
AT&T told him that the number was non-existent. The number
lovely.
Did not roll. That's exactly right. So he was dumbfounded. And
oh my gosh.
So if you remember, do you remember Hillary Cole when she was on with us?
I think so. I believe I do.
Hillary Cole had AT&T. She tried twice and could not get through. It's an AT&T problem.
No.
Wow.
Another reason why I don't like them.
Well, and you know what? That just seals the deal. And look, if anybody is in the chat room right now and wants to call, so you'll know ahead of time, Griselda, in case you get knocked off, 323-843-6172, 323-843-6172. Ron Carter is really bummed because he wanted to – I mean, he's the one who emailed me. God bless him.
Wow.
So I know I was putting out feelers, and I didn't know it was him writing back to me. Turned out, I said, if whatever Mr. Carter wants me to play, and he said, Mr. Carter said, everything that you have planned is fine, and he's laughing. And I said, oh, my God, it's really you. So he put aside time today. Now, you know how busy he can be? This is a legend.
Yeah.
So again, if anybody wants to call to find out what the story is, 323-843-6172. I got to check this phone. This is crazy. 2 years, Griselda, that's never happened.
No. And
wow.
It's that one carrier. Weird.
And actually, at the time that Hillary Cole had called, we didn't know what the problem was. But for AT&T, the operator, to say, oh, it doesn't work, it doesn't exist. What happened was that AT&T can't patch in, so therefore they tell you that it doesn't exist. Oh, my God. I'm glad I'm laughing about this. That's crazy.
It is. All right. That's just wild. That's just too
you
weird.
You know what? We'll play music.
There you go.
That's what we'll do. And for folks who have joined us thinking that you're going to hear Ron Carter, he tried to get through. He called at 1 o'clock on the cell phone to say that he tried a number of times. Bless his heart. So thanks, Griselda, for calling.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I can keep going and putting away my stuff and actually getting something to eat because it's lunchtime for me. So.
Okay. Well, you get something to eat, and by golly, I'll play something from the CD that was released earlier this year featuring, God bless him, the late Mulgrew Miller. And, wait a minute now. Hold on.
What?
Griselda?
What?
I'm going to kick you off because I see a 212 area code.
Awesome. Awesome.
Okay. Thank you, Griselda.
All right. Talk to you later. You're welcome.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. This is Hybrid Jazz. Hello. Who is this?
Ron Carter. How are you?
Hey, Ron. Oh, my gosh. That's wonderful. How did you make that happen?
I just tried 3 or 4 times more until I warmed down.
You know what? God bless you. That's so wonderful. Well, look, all right, now that you're here, let me give you the introduction that I had planned out for you.
Okay.
Let me tell folks that when I got involved in radio in 1976, I had no earthly idea that things would transpire the way that they did. I'm 60 years old now. There have been a number of highlights in this long broadcasting career, but today is one of the major ones, because when we are talking about the genre of jazz and one of the pioneers, and I don't even think that this man understands in all the ways he is a pioneer, but over 2,500 musical projects, that includes albums, that doesn't include the other kinds of musical endeavors he has done. Professor Emeritus, Honorary Doctor, 2012 Downbeat Jazz Hall of Famer. Why did they wait so long? This is a living legend who makes everything that he has ever done sound better. Ron Carter.
Wow. Good afternoon to you and your listeners.
Good afternoon to you, sir, and thank you for your persistence. You have no idea. I'm so psyched. Mr. Carter, or Dr. Carter,
yes.
Or Ron,
yes.
Please tell me, do you feel as if this is, it just feels like there is a new page, despite the chaos in the world, do you feel like this is a new page being turned for you? Are you getting excited all over again about jazz?
Well, you know, I've never been one to say it was dying or dead or in deep trouble. I've always felt that there were enough wonderful young players who were determined to not let the music die or fade away. With the new schools having programs that didn't have them 15 years ago, and the enrollment and the audition tapes coming in like cheap pancakes, there's a lot of interest in the younger crowd to become a part of this music. So while I don't feel this is a new sunshine, clearly the clouds that people predict are not there.
Thank you so much for saying that, because we get a number of naysayers on the show here, and I always have to temper that with saying this, and you can either agree or not, but the state of terrestrial radio is critical. Even though there are signs indicating that some major companies are getting involved in online situations, which is wonderful, terrestrial radio needs to have more jazz, because a lot of folks simply aren't interested in computer programming or even satellite radio. I really do think that if there was someone who knew how to program a prototype station really well in the United States, it would fall across the rest of the countries to do the same. Because really, out of sight, out of mind, how do people get their fix of jazz? What do people tell you when you're playing out? How have they heard you? Have they always been fans? Are they new fans? What do you get in the way of buzz?
Well, let's go back about five lines in your past two paragraphs, and let me erase the word, erase the phrase, get their fix. That's kind of a negative, pejorative sound to that phrase for me. So if you can kind of emotionally erase that phrase, we can get this conversation to the next paragraph of mine.
Okay. I certainly meant it in a positive way. It's get what they need in the way of musical healing.
No. I understand your intent, and I understand the intensity with which you have the fervor for this music. I think that phrase is a little more than my generation finds applicable to this music. But let's not get stuck on that. You know, I've found that people who come to where I'm playing are either longtime fans, they're fans because their parents were fans, or they happen to be really interested in collecting music and have a variety of some of the discs I am a part of and want to see who is this person who makes these records with people who are not necessarily jazz stars and make the record sound good. Everybody from Aretha Franklin to Paul Simon to a couple of early James Brown things to Jefferson Airplane, you know, it's a pretty good list, I think. And people who come to see me for those reasons, I think. I think in addition to that, I've made a couple of records with the hip-hop rap group of guys, and I'm sampled quite a bit of time, so I'm kind of involved in that era, too. The record I made with Tribe Called Quest called the Low End Theory.
Yes.
It's considered the record of the decade, which is quite an honor for the record to have, and certainly helped those guys become even more well-known in the public arena. But again, you know, and I think an additional factor is that the music schools are turning out players who are now becoming kind of keepers of the history. They know the records from the 60s, from the 50s, from the 40s. They know the records from the 90s, and they're interested in going out and seeing who are these people who they are being told by their teachers are important people in the music industry.
You're right about that, Ron, because earlier today my son and I were listening to EST, and before you came on to the show, I was playing your track from that brilliant album back in 1965. My son is 21. He's going to school, and when I told him that you were going to be on the show, when I told him that what he was about to play, he just lit up. You are right, and you know, in drawing something that you said earlier into this particular stellar quintet from the mid-60s, Miles Davis at that time, he was in transition, and you talked about younger cats and these beautiful young people like you at that time coming in with Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter to give Miles Davis an infusion of new energy. And I'm excited. Do you really see that happening these days in jazz?
There's always young players who are above the mark, but I mean who are above their fellow musicians. And these are the guys who are going out to these small rooms in New York, certainly, and talking to the club owner into hiring a duo or a trio for one night in the back of a corner of their small restaurant, or starting to kind of follow Sam Rivers' line of thought in the early 70s when he had Riff Bia. They're making these places take place because the club scene is limited to the bigger names. They're determined to be a part of this music at a higher level than what they are, and they understand that the more they play and as they increase their visibility and their music acumen and their musicians' friends, they're able to kind of not only just earn a living, but be able to move along the spectrum of being called to play with people who want to listen to more often.
Yeah. Yeah, I really do feel with the number of guests that have been on the show recently, not only seasoned musicians, but also these these brilliant musicians that have absolutely studied their past. And is that something that is almost causing a euphoria in you, Ron? I really love it when these young musicians love what has transpired from the inception of jazz and really want to make sure that they are reverent about the past and infuse what they have so that it creates this new energy. Do you have any favorites around you these days that you like to listen to, or is it just everything that is popping for you?
Well, I think the entire system of enthusiasm that they all have is I find really heartwarming. I mean, they're being told that the music is dead. They're being told that they can't earn a living at it. They're being told that there are no places to play, and clearly the radio stations that were playing music when I was their age don't exist. Despite these negative comments that are being thrown away, they're determined to prove all those people wrong. And I think it isn't that they want to prove them wrong. They're determined to play what they play and play what they hear, to share what their thoughts are through their instrument with the listeners other than their grandmother and their first cousin. As regards to who the up-and-coming players are, I don't really do that. When I go to hear young guys play, I just go to hear them, see how they solve the issues on the bandstand. What issues do they see that are not working for them? Are they playing the sets correctly? Are they playing, are the tunes in the same key close together? Are they solos too long? Are there too many? Are there not enough variety in the arrangements? I look for those kinds of curious things to see if they're really minding developing their music through these areas of interest to me. And to name the guys who impressed me would do those guys who I don't see, not the best recommendation. So I won't tell you who I like. I just like primarily all of them who are determined to kick the naysayers out the door on their ear.
I love that. I appreciate that 100%. Here's something. It's so fascinating in doing the research about you, and there's so much. Oh, my God, there's two or three pages of notes that I have in my spiral notebook. Here's something that needs to get said, because you, I don't know of anybody who has a master's degree in the way that you have a master's degree. You are so educated, and you paid attention to your education so much. When I studied that facet of your life, I came across this particular gentleman, Gunther Schuller. In 1957, he coined this phrase called third stream. And basically, it's a synthesis of classical and jazz, a hybrid, if you will. You, Ron Carter, seem to be the quintessential notion of that so often in your career. How do you feel about that, and what do you feel, what is in your head in regarding how one defines jazz, if that's important to you?
Well, you know, when someone asks me, what do I think, how do I define jazz, and if I'm kind of concerned about whether it's J-A-Z-Z or J-E-S-S, I kind of tell them that those things are kind of in the way of them enjoying the music. I would recommend them all, if they want to really sit down and talk to me with a very serious conversation, some records that I think would kind of give them a broad brush view of the jazz history. I taught it for a number of years at City College in New York.
Yes.
And I tell them to go hear certain bands live so they can hear what those records are representing on the bandstand. And my last thought would be that if you want to hear what jazz can be, come hear my bands.
Oh, for sure. And that is exactly why you are here. And let us make sure that we tell people that the Hamilton in Washington, D.C. has done a number. Oh, my gosh. They've been featuring some of the creme de la creme of jazz and all that it can be. And you are going to be there Thursday night. And
yes.
I know a number of people who are just absolutely over the moon about this, Ron. This is a beautiful venue. Have you ever been there before?
No, I haven't. I'm not sure where it is even. I have to get my GPS to guide me from New York there.
You do. Listen, it is one of the most awesome rooms you could possibly imagine. It's got staggered seating. The acoustics are beautiful. You go into the men's room and the women's room, and you can hear what's happening on stage with such clarity. It's going to freak you out in the best way, seriously.
Well, I trust your description of the women's room, restroom sound. I won't shut that out, but I'll check out the men's room for you and tell if your story is true.
Okay, and I actually did check out the men's room. It's the same. So how is this going to fly on Thursday? Do you want to give us a little bit of a trade secret or two as to how this is going to go down and what you're going to feature on the show on Thursday?
Well, I'll plan an 85-minute program with no intermission. The pianist who replaced Mulgrew Miller a year ago is Donald Vega. He's from Los Angeles by way of Nicaragua, and a wonderful player. He's recommended to me by Mulgrew, as a matter of fact, when I asked him. Mulgrew decided he wanted to spend more time developing his own band. He had a trio and a nice sextet called Wingspan.
Yes.
And he had been appointed the jazz program director at William Patterson College, and those responsibilities were demanding more of his personal time that he couldn't make enough of my gigs to feel comfortable not being there. So I asked him, I went through all that stuff. So who can I get that's going to be able to grow to where you already are? And he recommended Donald Vega, which is a wonderful choice, and I'm happy he felt comfortable knowing what whoever playing piano was stepping into would be able to handle. As far as Russell Malone, everyone may know him through his association with Harry Connick and Diana Krall, and he's made some nice records of his own, and his own name has got a wonderful trio that he works in New York. He worked in New York 2 weeks ago at a club called Smoke down in the, up to 106th Street in Broadway. In any event, I planned the program 2 days before. I have a story in my head. And if I get it right, the audience kind of hears what we feel about the daily events of our lives in the form of music. And for as many people as there are in the audience, and I hope that there are too many people, so to speak, that you have these too many views of a story that we play for them in musical print. Each person has a chance to do a solo feature that gives us a chance to, me and whoever is not playing, a chance to enjoy this person's ability to capture an audience's attention by playing by himself. No mean feat. And again, one of the reasons we don't have intermissions is it takes the audience too long to kind of get back into the zone of listening, to go out to the bar or go out to the concession stand and buy whatever they do, or just make conversation on the way out to the courtroom. We found it's a little difficult to kind of get their edge back in our favor. So I've kind of avoided doing intermissions just so I can kind of keep them by their throat until I really let go.
You know what? That is an excellent point. I have never heard anyone say this before now, but you are right, because and especially if any sort of imbibement is involved and people are socially chattering, to get them to rezone is a hefty task. So that's very wise of you, sir.
Thank you.
Wow. Yes, absolutely. You know what? I don't know how much time you have, and I have all set to play from San Sebastian, Candlelight, which I absolutely love, by the way.
Thank you.
You are so welcome. Thank you. I want to be able to ask you, though, because I want you to be able to do your afternoon in the way you see best. If you could tell me, Ron Carter, truly you are, and I don't know how you feel about this, but to me, whenever I think of jazz and how I came to love it as a little girl and got my love back for it as I grew up, one of the handful of people that I think of is you. You are a legend. And you've got stories that most people couldn't even dream of having in their lifetimes. Could you tell me so far in your life what has been so magical for you that it makes you feel absolutely fantastic to share?
As a performer?
You know what? In your musical comings and goings, something that was pivotal in the way you were playing. You almost felt as if you were lifted up from the stage.
I've been playing a long time. I'm not sure I could go that far back, but I think one special event that may come to mind was I was working at a club in New York called Sweet Basil. It's no longer there, unfortunately. It's a nice room to play in. It had a nice following and good food. In any event, it was like a Saturday night in New York, and if you've been in New York on Saturday night on summertime, it gets kind of loud and raucous, and people come in from wherever they come in to do the town, so to speak, and they always end up at the jazz club, and those people are always the ones who talk the loudest, who drink the most liquor, and who kind of have a real boisterous good time. Excuse me. Well, this particular night, the band was supposed to start at 9 o'clock, and we couldn't start at 9 o'clock because half the band hadn't gotten there yet. And those of you who know my penchant for punctuality know that I was kind of having smoke coming out of both ears. So the club asked me what did I think my choices were. And I said, well, I'm not sure what you mean my choices. It's your club. Tell me what you want us to do. He said, well, why don't you go ahead and play, and we'll just kind of work it out, you know. So I said, okay. But what I did, I played by myself. I played like a 20-minute bass solo, just me, in a room that sat maybe 200 people standing all over. You know, Saturday night in New York is always like that, hopefully. And what surprised everyone was that the audience kind of toned it down enough so that their neighbors could enjoy this, what they call a bass spectacle. I call it playing by myself. And I think those who came to New York to have a great time got that great time from a source they would never have imagined having a great time doing. This
How
is a bass player played by himself. So I thought that that's probably, if I had to pick a time when I kind of levitated, that's a good word here, that would be one of those moments.
Wow. I feel that because it must be amazing. I'm just the messenger of those who play the music. But just speculating to be able to go into yourself and feel what you're playing and have that unspoken love come back to you in ways that you didn't expect, that must be one of the greatest pleasures in life.
It's certainly an enjoyable one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
it's what you didn't say there that is going to amuse me for a while. But look, if one does not play an instrument, my son does, his father does, people around me do, but those of us who do not play live vicariously through you, and especially since you have played for so long. When you are playing with other people, you're very, very conscious of the team effort around you and what your particular part is. But when you are playing by yourself, whoa, that means that the sky is the limit.
Yeah, I got this. Hold on 1 minute.
Okay.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay.
I got my answer. Just something. Just 1 minute here.
And I will let you go.
Okay, no, wait, I have to do this first. I'll answer your question in detail as best I can.
Yes.
Let's see here. I have to take this out here. That's that. Nope. Let's see here. That's the right one. I'm filling these cards here.
And by the way, for folks
who are
listening, we are talking to Ron Carter.
What? Okay, Can you start that question again? I got kind of distracted. I apologize for the distraction.
Oh, no, not at all. No, look, I sort of knew that you, being the person that you are, were going to have certain things transpire. The difference between you playing with an ensemble and you playing by yourself and that particular night that was pretty magical, you, in not knowing what was going to happen, you had to play by yourself. You felt as though the sky was the limit. There must be this amazing freedom in you just being able to play and play what you want, what you feel, what's in your soul, and have that wave of affection, appreciation, respect, adulation come back at you to buoy you in order to play more. That must be one of the coolest things in the world.
Well, you know, there are a lot of nice, I think we, the musical community, jazz community, has a lot of these type of moments. They come and go so quickly, we don't recognize that we were there until the next day or so, or the next set, or the next tune, or the next soloist. One of the things Mulgrew left with me after he worked with Tony Williams for 4 or 5 years was that on certain nights, for as well as the band sound, and Tony was always amazing, he would just get to another level for however long this level was available to him, and it would just, everyone would be just so stunned after working for him for all these nights, all of a sudden to hear this new level kind of pass by their eyes. And at the end of the night, Tony would look at Mulgrew and just say, mop, M-O-P, as in mop the floor, as in playing so well, he just mopped up a whole other level. So we have these mop moments that we're not aware of until the next day, or someone calls to our attention, or someone sneaked a record in, they recorded illegally, and we hear it played back a year later and say, wow, that's what I was doing at that night. So those moments are happen more often than we're able to recall. You know, playing by yourself is a whole other task, and especially a bass player who's limited in terms of how many notes you can play at one time. As a piano player, has all these chords available. As a guitar player, has all those kind of options. And if people who come out to a jazz concert don't necessarily expect to see a bass player playing by himself. I mean, completely by himself as the song, not just a solo by himself amidst the other solos of a certain tune, but just to have him go out there and stand alone and play it till you think he's had enough, and hopefully that they've gotten enough of his story to feel that they've been attached to a whole other kind of reader here. I like those moments, and I like to have more of them, and I'm sure that as I keep trying to find the right notes, I'll have a chance to find those moments even more.
Well, here's what's so beautiful about you, Ron, is that, you know, in having seen a myriad of bass players through the years, there are some that are so technically proficient that they really are astounding. But some of the time, when one is technically proficient, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have the depth of soul attached to that playing. And you... it's just so exhausting when one does any research, and I'm putting it to all the guests in our chat room to do this today. This is your homework assignment. You go to any sort of research about Ron Carter, and you look through the list of all of the people, I mean all of the people that Ron has ever played with. It's exhausting, first of all. But with all of those people, the level of integrity, first of all, in your playing, and then the soulfulness, that the passion, honestly, the love, it's my old hippie speaking here, but I will, the love that comes out through your playing just made every project that much more ringing of truth. It's just amazing.
Well, you know, when I do these various projects, first of all, I'm always surprised that these projects that are not necessarily jazz-oriented, these musicians and their managers, agents, know that there's another music out there other than what their client is currently involved with, or their person is involved with, and that my name is one of the people they think that can help their project reach another level of success in terms of musical success has always kind of cracked me up, you know. And in New York, since this travel is so easy to get to New York, I mean, you can get to Paris and New York in 7 hours and go to the studio, make a record as soon as you land, just about. That they would pick me out for their project. Again, it kind of tickles my fancy. But I always say this, what I've always tried to do when I play with other people, particularly other people, is make that band leader and that band feel like, I belong there. This is what I'm supposed to do with your band.
Mm.
This is how I respond to your music, to your arrangements, to the key you're playing in, to the changes you're playing, to the tempo. My job is to make your band sound like I'm part of this band. I belong in your band. And I'm happy that I've had some pretty good success with that point of view. And again, you know, it's never really been about me in terms of playing the bass. It's all about how can I make people who I play with give the bass more attention than they would normally give it, and that they understand that the bass is really a main factor in their ensemble, whether they're just playing the bottom of the chord and bass parts written out, or they do some isolated duos with the horn player or the vocals and the bass player, or stuff that people use the bass player for. He's really, as Reggie Jackson said, he's the straw that stirs the drink.
I love that. I love that. And that's it. You have such reverence for any project that you have tackled through the years, and that can't help but translate. You know, in all the years of radio since I've been doing it, I always used to hear from program directors that the audience is not intelligent, and that's completely a falsehood. People are so much smarter and so much more intuitive than we all give them credit for. People can pick up when there's reverence among musicians, when there's artistry created as opposed to making a record only. And that's what you have done. It's just I'm boggled because I've immersed myself in Ron Carter music for the past couple of days, and each time my heart skips a beat because the inordinate class that you lend to every musician that has been honored to have you in their midst. And I hate to sound like I'm fawning, but I think that you know I'm telling the truth. So I'm just blessed that we are able to hear this kind of genius in our lifetime.
Well, you know, what's going to be interesting for me is with your listenership being the size that it is, let's see if they really want to come out and support this music. I mean, we all hear the game, and we all hear nice conversations, and we all hear, you know, nice things, and it's time for them to put their feet where their mouth is, you know.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
You know, one of the jazz community's concerns throughout the years has been press, getting the media to, whether it's radio, newspapers, magazines, TV, to give us the same kind of interest in covering our arts and review our concerts and our gigs as the orchestras get, as the operas get, as the ballets get, as other musics get. And we have always kind of felt that newspapers never gave us the same amount of coverage. You know, I'll give an example. An orchestra will come to New York and they'll play a concert on Monday night. The paper will review this group, this concert, the following Tuesday. Now, a jazz group will be in New York on Tuesday night, and they don't want to get a review at all, and they plan 6 nights. I never understood that rationale for spreading the news. You know, one of my things when I make my small announcements and not very long announcements on the bandstand, and I always ask the band's permission if they mind if I do this, because I don't want them to be held accountable for my views. The New York Times has a heading that says, "All the news that's fit to print." That's their logo, more or less. It's right by the New York Times. All the news that's fit to print. And I look at the paper on a daily basis, because I like feeling the paper. You know, I like to turn the pages and hear that noise, you know.
Yes.
Like throwing out the paper, you know. I never see jazz bands that I see advertised in the issues and in the magazines that come to my home for who's playing in town. I never see them in the newspapers in the New York Times. So my logic tells me that the New York Times, whoever they are, feel that jazz is some news that's not print to print. And the only way they can change my view is that if they have a jazz in newspapers. And I just think about the New York Times as an item to kind of vent about the lack of coverage we get, that certainly is not equivalent to the coverage that the other arts get. It's always disturbed us, and I think I speak for the jazz community at large, that unless we get out and carry our own banners in front of the clubs and take out our own ads and stuff like that, most people don't know that we work. They don't know where we're playing. They don't have a chance to come down here and play because they don't have access to the day after our opening, for example. Say, wow, he's acting this guy. That's reviewing the paper for this band on Tuesday, on Wednesday night. He's working all week. Let's go down there one night. Well, if they don't know that we're there by a review in the newspaper, then they're not going to know that we exist. And it's always troubled us. And I think I can go on a limb of saying us being the jazz community.
Yes.
But again, you know, the young players are determined to make this music continue to have a life. And all the naysayers who say that it's on its way out or it's got a lower percent of the market, they don't care about that. They want to play this music, and they're making places for them to play. And I applaud all of them, as loud as I can.
Well, let me tell you something. I'll say this about the Hamilton where you're going to be on Thursday. You know what? For a venue to do this, Ron, to have a DC Jazz Festival, they do this in conjunction with Capital Jazz Fest. Now that's over. So now there is a chance to see, because this has been going on for several days now, Pancho Sanchez, his Latin jazz band tonight, Cyrus Chestnut tomorrow, and the Ron Carter Golden Striker Trio on Thursday. Now this is the time to put your money where your mouth is. Here's a venue that is focusing on the absolute penultimate in jazz. And you have a chance. This is not a big amount of money, and people have money for everything else. The reason why the publicity gets to be is because club owners and managers want to see that folks are going to come out. If they're not going to come out, it's not going to necessarily get publicized. So we have to support as if our lives depended on it these days. And that's how we fix it. Are you agreed?
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Well, you know what? I'll see you on Thursday. I cannot absolutely wait.
Well, we're looking forward to having a nice crowd, and we've got some music under our belts. We want to get out of our systems, and we'll start getting out of our systems at the 7:30 concert starts or 8:30.
You know what? Let me just check, because I've got the website right here, and I'm going to go to especially your page. Let me just see here. And of course, it's, let's see,
7:30.
That's it. That's it.
Hamilton.
That's
Live.
Awesome.
Hamilton Live, D.C. 614th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. 20007. The band starts on time.
Oh, yes.
If you get that 10 minutes to 8, you'll miss a nice story starting.
That's right. And don't forget that Ron Carter is very punctual. You get there early.
Yes, we will.
Okay. Thank you so much, Ron. I appreciate you.
You're
and
welcome.
Thanks for hanging in there, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Great. Have a good afternoon, and thank you to your audience and your fans and your Facebook and tweets, or wherever they do. Keep on tweeting and keep on getting it up. Thank you.
Thank you. We will. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ron Carter. Oh, I'm so glad that he decided to keep on trying when AT&T said that number didn't exist. Woo! Let us do this for you, shall we? I promised we were going to play this. This is from an inspiring, an enchanting, an absolutely delicious project just out a few months ago. Ron Carter and his Golden Striker Trio, San Sebastian. The song is called Candlelight on Hybrid Jazz. You might not have heard that song for a while, huh? Oh, let me tell you something. That was no accident to play that song. We certainly in this region do love Roberta Flack anyway for a number of reasons. Well, she's a D.C. girl, and she spent a lot of time in Howard University, and there's a lot of musical history attached to Roberta Flack and Howard and the D.C. area. But, of course, my modus operandi for playing that is because Ron Carter played bass on that song. On the whole of the album, first take back in 1969, released June 20th, 1969, as a matter of fact, Lionel Richie's birthday. Don't let my mind drift. But this was the debut album by Roberta Flack, and it was on Atlantic Records. Track that you just heard, First Time Ever I Saw Your Face, picked, handpicked by Clint Eastwood for his 1971 film, Play Misty for Me, and consequently, that thing just plumb exploded. But let us go back to the personnel on this particular album. Roberta on piano and vocals, of course. Bucky Pizzarelli on guitars. Benny Powell on trombone. Seldon Powell, Frank West on saxophone. Ray Lucas on drums. Ron Carter on bass. And just to drive home the point of what I tried to tell Ron, and I'm not sure how much praise that he gets in one ear. He sounds like he is a gentleman who is certainly used to that, but not necessarily comfortable with the accolades that come his way. I saw another interview with him, and he states, "I play. That's what I do." And boy, play does he ever. Woo! We heard something from him right before Roberta, that was Candlelight from San Sebastian. And just beautiful work, honestly. Released the top of the year, beginning of the year, featuring the late, great Mulgrew Miller. And I know, picking up from Ron, that he's the kind of person that in many ways keeps his private emotions and does not wear them on his sleeve. I perfectly understand that. But you can best believe that with the kind of relationship that Ron Carter and Mulgrew Miller had through the years, that loss of Mulgrew some several days ago is going to be taking a toll for a long time. Mulgrew on there, as well as Russell Malone. And Russell will be with Ron this Thursday at the Hamilton in D.C. Woo! My heart is just so full, I can't even say. Let's just dive into another track, shall we? I promised Ron that we were going to play a few. And this is something from just a few years ago, what, 2007? Ron Carter's Dear Miles project. This has got a little bit of a story, the song title, because it's actually also the name of a CD from Miles Davis some years ago. Let us turn our attention, if you will, to more of Ron Carter and Seven Steps to Heaven on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Oh, this is so much fun. Let's get to it. Thank you.
Somehow, somewhere you lost your way.
Damn, where am I? Wow. I tell you what, this is the honest to goodness truth, because Ron Carter was going to be on the show today. Every single song had more care than usual because I was not going to surround a world-class legend with mediocre shiggity. You know what I'm saying? So consequently, we had to put a little Gil Scott Heron in the mix for a couple of different reasons. First of all, phew, that was one of the record label Flying Dutchman's valuable moments in their brief and shining time, Pieces of a Man from 1971. This was the follow-up to Small Talk at 125th and Lenox. And we have Bob Teal to thank for persuading this poet, Gil Scott Heron, who was bent on writing in his college days, to turn it around and maybe record some of his thoughts. Thank you, Bob. Bob was the producer, by the way, at one time for Louis Armstrong and John Coltrane. So Bob was able to talk Gil Scott into doing that debut and then follow it up with Pieces of a Man. Lady Day and John Coltrane, the name of that song right there. Hubert Laws doing his flute on the project, as well as, say it with me now, Ron Carter on bass. Yes, indeed. Dr. Carter, that was a little assignation by Berklee College, by the way, gave him an honorary doctorate in 2005. Dr. Carter has probably more stories than we could ever care to imagine. From back in the 60s, when he was working with Chico Hamilton and Eric Dolphy, and then got involved with one of the most amazing quintets that ever were recorded in musical history. Oh! Just have to pause there. Branford Marcellus. Yes, I'm telling you. Metamorphosin, the name of the project from 2009, dedicated to those who influenced or inspired Branford in his career before they passed on and went to that great jazz crossroads in the sky. Bless his heart. Much like he did in Requiem back in 1999, Branford wanted to make sure that attention was paid to those people who were instrumental in paving the way, like Michael Brecker, Dewey Redman, Freddie Hubbard, Max Roach. And this, the track that you heard, The Return of the Jitney Man, sort of that, mind, funny, funky, Thelonious Monk feel to it, wasn't it? Written by Jeff Watts on drums, Eric Rivas on bass on Metamorphosin, and Joey Calderazzo on piano. And, of course, Branford doing his thing. Just delicious stuff. And we heard, too, man, this has been so much fun so far, Ron Carter from Dear Miles back in 2007. And the track that you heard was Seven Steps to Heaven, which was a pivotal album from Miles Davis, featuring Ron Carter and Herbie Hancock and Tony Williams. And it wasn't Wayne Shorter yet. It was, let me look that up, because name is on the tip of my tongue on sax. I'll find him momentarily. But back to Dear Miles. Just awesome. You know that Ron was thinking of those times back in the 60s, because when that Dream Team quintet came to be for Miles, he needed that young blood badly. He's gone through some health issues, and Seven Steps to Heaven was like, what, 1962, so that when, by the time ESP rolled around 3 years later, woo, Wayne Shorter was in the fold, and things were cooking with gas. And I had told the wonderful Griselda Medina, when she was on with me at the beginning of the show. Thank you so much for that exploratory means to find out if the phone number was working, Griselda. Even after Ron had left Miles Davis, they remained close, and that was good to know. Ron, again, has some stories. On Dear Miles, by the way, it was, of course, Ron on bass, Stephen Scott on piano, Peyton Crossley on drums, and Roger Squitero on percussion. Now, I want to go back and find what I was looking for. Let me see if I can. Seven Steps to From Heaven. Right. Okay, here we go. Just so you get the right speed of who was playing sax on there. Let me see. Let me see. After the pausing that we had when Ron was with us and apparently his wife came into the room to remind him of something that he had to do, I'm not so concerned anymore. Actually, I'm not so concerned about a whole lot anymore because things happen the way they're supposed to. George Coleman is who I'm looking for. There we go. On sax. Yeah. And speaking of sax, can we do this? Oh, man. Haven't heard a track from First Love for a while by Everett Harp. I don't think any of you will mind if we play Everett Harp. You think? Produced by George Duke, you know it's going to be good. Some, actually many, call this CD the best of Everett Harp's career. He was totally into it, and here's why. He was not so concerned about delivering the smooth goods on this. You know what I mean? First Love applies to what he loved most about getting involved in music, Coltrane and Dave Brubeck. And you can hear a little bit, maybe a lot, of what we're talking about with this track Before You Leave on Hyper Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. Hybrid Jazz.
Thank you.
some of us knew this the first time around in 2008 when we heard The Shed from David P. Stevens on guitar. He featured Carol Riddick on Love Is Still in Style. Oh, my God. The earth moved. Well, now David's got a new CD out called Epiphany, and he's got Carol once again. Something about those Philly girls, something about those Philly boys. And they both are Philadelphians. It's a particular kind of soul that's intermingled with some jazz. Just divine stuff. Your Embrace is the name of the song on Epiphany. And DavidStevensMusic.com has more information. A couple of things about Carol. I did not know that she has been touring with Will Downing. So at the Cap Jazz Festival this past weekend, she was with Will Downing, and she got to meet Angela Beaufield, which is wonderful. And then she was with Will over the weekend at Nokia in L.A., and she shared the stage with Jill Scott. Woo! Scary stuff, but in the best way. Oh, some of the greatest singers on the planet, as far as that goes. So Carol's taken care of, and so is David. He's got some major gigs coming up on the 19th at the Bitter End in New York City. In July, David's going to be at the Harlem Mirror Festival, which is happening in Central Park. And then, just found this out today, the day before my birthday, October 15th, he's going to be at Blues Alley in Washington, D.C. So, David, if you're listening, looks like we got our deal cemented as far as the celebration is concerned. Thank you so much for planning that out. That's wonderful. Wow, David is one of these young cats who takes over on the stage with that guitar. He is just amazing. And he's the one who pointed out to me, bless his heart, didn't know this, for those folks who are interested in this, and actually, you know, for some of us, not so much all of the musical content, because you know how I feel, but just because it's happening, it really bears mentioning. This requires some major thought. Now, recently, Bob Pittman, who is the CEO of Clear Channel, got together with this deal, a company in Nashville, Digital Content. Clear Channel investigating the possibilities and the future of digital radio. Online stuff as opposed to focusing all his eggs in one terrestrial basket, okay? And then we find out that now Apple is doing some online deal stuff. They've got a radio station online. I don't know how it all works, but this is the news that comes at me. Now, Michael Tozzi, who used to be the program director of WJJZ, the smooth jazz station in Philadelphia, one of those stations that went away along with many others, Michael, as of the past 24, 48 hours, now has JJZ back on AM at 1480 and also at 106 HD2. This is very promising. Now, again, you know, I'm not a smooth jazz person, but it bears mentioning that Michael was able to get this back within the context of Philadelphia, for sure, but also in two different places. So there's more attention being paid to what is happening in creative circles within jazz, that genre. So, next step, what? Hybrid jazz, 24 hours a day? Keep your fingers crossed. I'm just saying. Earl Klugh, One Night Alone with You from Soda Fountain Shuffle, 1985, especially for Griselda. She has been just so wonderfully supportive of hybrid jazz that she needs to have a song played for her frequently. So One Night Alone with You, Earl's 12th studio album, the first for Warner Brothers, a six-man band as opposed to an orchestra, sounded really good. Greg Fillinganes, Paul Jackson, Louis Johnson, Paulino da Costa, and our friend Harvey Mason. Backing up Earl on guitar on that really cool track. Everett Harp, Before You Leave, from First Love, from 2009, produced by George Duke, with a little bit of assistance from Dwight Sills on guitar, James Genus on that bass. That was so cool. Not a typical contemporary jazz project for Everett Harp. First of all, because George Duke was producing. Secondly, because Everett wanted to go into a more straight-ahead mode because of his love for John Coltrane and Dave Brubeck, among others. First Love, not necessarily a romantic title. First Love meaning what turned him on to music in the first place. So thank you, Everett. Cyrus Chestnut. We mentioned him earlier when Ron Carter was on the show with us in that first hour. I'm so happy that the Hamilton in Washington, D.C., in a lovely part of Washington, oh my God, with the Willard Hotel across the street, a historical hotel, so gorgeous, you can't even begin to believe it. The Hamilton, one of the most awesome venues that you will ever see. They are doing, in the same time frame as Cap Jazz, each June, the D.C. Jazz Festival. They've had some wonderful people that have been there. Tonight, Pancho Sanchez. Tomorrow night, it will be Cyrus Chestnut. Yes. And then on Thursday, it's going to be Ron Carter and the Golden Striker Trio. So I wanted to play something from the Cyrus Chestnut Trio from 2010 from Journeys. This is called Use Blues. Cyrus on piano, not a whole lot like him in the world, just a conglomeration of different kinds of factors to make this keyboard sing. On Hybrid Jazz, enjoy. Thank you.
our land, we grew up strong. We were wanted all along. I was taught to fight, taught to win. I never thought I could fail. No fight left, or so it seems. I am a man whose dreams have all deserted. I've changed my face, I've changed my name, but no one wants you when you lose.
Don't give up, 'cause you have been. Don't give up, you're not beaten yet.
That is a most delicious stew. Internationally flavored. Woo! Nutritious, delicious. Oh, my God. Herbie Hancock and one of his more anointed projects that he has ever done from 2010. Actually, it's called the Imagine Project. And not only talent from around the world with a peaceful motivation in mind, but documentation on film. And that's one of those tracks that was just so mind-boggling because we are certainly familiar with Pink and John Legend. We hadn't been familiar with them together. And honestly, I had never heard Pink sound that good or never heard John Legend sound that good, and I haven't heard them sing that well since. There was something about that combination, and of course, Jeff Beck on guitar helps considerably. Woohoo! But honestly, that little girl from Philadelphia sang her heart out. She told Herbie Hancock early on in the project that she wanted to come from a place of pain. And if they were on the same page as that, she could pull out something for him that was special. And she really did. Now, Peter Gabriel was the one who first brought this song to our attention, as he is so prone to do. From, let's see, do I have something on the stove? Hold on. Oh, I do. I didn't even know that. From, what? Back in the 80s, right? What year specifically? I forget which. But he had Kate Bush with him that was singing the Pink part, and, of course, Peter Gabriel singing the John Legend part. So it was the song of despair on one hand, but hope and promise on the other, and the juxtaposition is just so amazing. Those voices just fraught with emotion. So beautiful. Released in June of 2010, so it's got that summer vibe for whatever reason. Herbie just did a great job. And, of course, I was thinking of Herbie because of his partnership for so long and still in many ways with Ron Carter. Can you imagine being part of that quintet with Miles Davis in the early to mid-60s and creating such energy and healing, not only for Miles, for sure, but for anyone who was listening? Ron and Herbie are left from that little coalition, and they must get together from time to time and just talk about those days. Amazing. We also heard from Dwight Sills, Sliver Moon from Easy, 1999. If you are fortunate enough to be in the greater Los Angeles area to see the Playboy Jazz Festival this Father's Day weekend, know, ladies and gentlemen, that it will be George Duke, Jeffrey Osborne, and Dwight Sills sharing the stage. Oh, how I wish that I could have done it, but I couldn't pull that rabbit out of the hat this year. If you are going to go, please do. Grace Kelly will also be there. She was talking about it when she was on the show some weeks ago, so hopefully we'll get a chance to get to Grace. It's about 17, 18 minutes after the third hour of the show. We're going to get to some more tunage. Got to tell you, we heard from this Chestnut Trio, and that was from Journeys from 2010, Use Blues. And once again, Cyrus is going to be at the Hamilton in D.C. tomorrow night as part of the D.C. Jazz Festival. I don't know if he's going to have the same assembly that he had on this track and on the CD a couple of years ago. That was Neil Smith on drums and Desron Douglas on bass. It's anyone's guess who he's going to pull into the ring tomorrow night, but it's going to be special because he is. Gospel background, that was his childhood. Swing, bop, balladry that absolutely haunts you. He puts it all together and makes that keyboard absolutely something special. And he got some amazing training from Stern Taskmasters, John Hendricks, and Betty Carter. So he's been around the block, too, a few times. Just celebrated his 50th birthday. Cyrus Chestnut, raring to go at the Hamilton tomorrow night. Let's dig this out for you. I promised EC that we would get to a track, one of his swingier numbers from It's All About the Rhythm. EC3 and Company coming to Germano's Trattoria in Baltimore on Sunday the 23rd. This is a little taste of Rune, what you're going to hear. Ojos de Rojo on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. and this is Hybrid Jazz.
And
Oh, my goodness. Woo! This woman tears me up. I'm telling you what, that is my friend, Chris McNulty. Australia's loss, New York's gain, and I don't know what her plans are to relocate, if she's going to stay in New York or what, because she has been wondering about that. She is trying to sell a home in Pennsylvania and enjoying the many accolades, I'm telling you, many that have come her way since she has released the song that sings you here. That from it, Letter to Marta, a song that Chris wrote when she was a teenager, it resurfaced some time later, and she was able to find Andrei Kondokov, this amazing pianist, and they worked some kind of special vibe there, didn't they? Oh, amazing. On the album, Ugana Okegwo. I hope I say that right. It's either you or Ugana Okegwo on bass. Paul Bolenbeck on guitar. Marcus Gilmore on drums. Graham Wood, Igor Buttman, Anita Wardell backing things up. And Chris just gathering momentum at this particular phase of her career and wowing these critics that really don't necessarily pay so much attention, but they are to her, and I am just thrilled. Before that, it was Horace Silver, and oddly, didn't really realize this until this morning when I was thinking about it, but Chris has a song written by Horace Silver, Lonely Woman, on the song that sings you here, and she just tore it up. Amazing stuff. The Horace Silver Quintet, don't you know, from 1965, Songs for My Father. And we'll focus some more on those, by the way, on Thursday's show. In honor of John Tavares Silva, who's pictured on the cover, and Horace got inspired by his dad and on a trip to Brazil because he knew that dad was born on one of the Cape Verde Islands. Horace has this interesting lineage, Portuguese on his dad's side and Irish and African-American on his mom's side. And he just poured all of that sweet stuff. Oh, we talk about a hybrid stew. Just amazing, this work. And as long as we're talking about credits, Roger Humphreys and Roy Brooks trading out one of the sessions. Gene Taylor, Teddy Smith trading out theirs on bass. Carmel Jones, Blue Mitchell on trumpet. Joe Henderson, Junior Cook, back and forth on tenor sax. And Teddy Smith, yes, we mentioned him. Just wanted to mention him again because he did such a great job. 1965, just love going back in time and making sure you know what the good stuff was all about. Woof. And then making sure you know that someone who has it constantly in his mind that he wants to do right by those masters, my buddy EC3 with Friends, It's All About the Rhythm. Ojos de Rojo, Red Eye, Cedar Walton song, and on it, by the way, Janelle Gill on piano, my girl, Michael Bowie on bass, EC3 kicking it out with those drums, Dominique Patrick and Noel Tenner on percussion, Teddy Baker on sax, Arch Thompson on flute, what a character he is, and the solos taken by Teddy and EC3. And you should know that you can still get tickets, but it's a small, intimate, beautiful venue, so you want to make sure you get them if you're in the Baltimore, D.C. area. EC3 is going to be at Germano's Trattoria on Sunday the 23rd, and he's also going to be part of the festivities. Slantress Magazine has the Inspire Awards going on at the Gordon Center on the 22nd, and EC3 is the music director. Yes, just cooking with gas on all four cylinders. Let's see if we have time to do this. I think that we do. If we don't get to Jeffrey Osborne and Jack D. Jeanette today, it's okay. And Grace Kelly, I want to make sure that we have two songs we get to you before we leave the online radio situation today. This is one of them. Just found out that Wallace Roney is going to be at the Strathmore coming up in the next month or so as part of this sweet gathering, and we'll tell you about it. This is the title track from Home on Hybrid Jazz, one of the coolest interviews ever. And it didn't happen the first time around, but when it did the second, it was wonderful. One of my faves on trumpet, Wallace Roney on Hybrid Jazz.
Thank you.
And this is Hybrid Jazz.
There is a place that I dream of when I close my eyes. A place beyond all the stars and far beyond the skies. A place where peace and tranquility always abide. Steal away,
could say in the chat room is, dang, that is hot off the presses, don't you know? Gabriel Goodman let me have a sneak peek of a CD that is being mixed as we speak. 12 tunes right now, but you can get that signal at iTunes and Amazon. That is Steal Away. Thought we might need a little Jesus in the midst of all this stuff happening today. Oh, my gracious. I just love that. And Gabby and I have been going back and forth about the tune because, honestly, she sent it to me, I guess, some days ago. And as is the case for a lot of my mail on AOL, it goes to spam if AOL doesn't recognize who's sending stuff to me. So I had to dig it out. Heard it, my mind was blown, and I said, could I play it? She said, oh, honey, feel free. So then I said, you best believe I want to play it today because Ron Carter is going to be with me. And she said, yay, thank you. I shared a bus ride in Japan with Ron Mulgrew Miller, Christian McBride, and a bunch of great jazz kings in the 1990s when I was working with Chaka Khan. Hope the universe brings us together again. That's the kind of person she is. She's just amazing. Gabrielle Goodman and Steal Away from the forthcoming CD, the single available on iTunes and Amazon. Now, let us tell you about something else that you should know. Let me get up here. Hold on. I gotta stall for time a little bit. Okay. I want to get the music because we have time to play it. There's Daoud Saeed in the background. Wallace Roney, we heard from. Home, the name of the CD. Antoine Roney on sax. Aruan Ortiz on keys. Rashan Carter on bass. Kush Abadeh, I love to say that name, on drums. A tribute to Wayne Shorter is coming to the Strathmore in Bethesda, Maryland on August the 3rd. David Weiss and the Wallace Roney Orchestra will be there. Oh, yes, indeed. Make sure you get to see this beautiful tribute to Wayne Shorter. Wallace Roney has the right to make sure that tribute is done right. That's just awesome. And you know what else is awesome? Thursday's show. Tracy Hamlin will be with us, hot off her very successful CD release party that just took place last week. A brand new CD. Wait until you hear these tracks. It is just too awesome to stand. Beautiful stuff. So we got Baltimore in the house because Tracy's got Baltimore roots. So does Gabrielle Goodman, and they know each other very well and love each other. A lot of love here in the Baltimore, D.C. area. And I got a lot of love in my heart for you. Thanks for tuning in today. Griselda, thank you. Matt, thanks for tuning in. Just an amazing show. Thank you so much to Ron Carter again at the Hamilton in D.C. on Thursday. And we'll see you Thursday at 1 o'clock on Hybrid Jazz.